Good afternoon. This is Michael Osterlink with the Medical Freedom Report, a project of the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons. And I'm speaking with Scott Tipps from the National Health Federation. Scott, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Michael.
And you're actually, if I remember correctly, calling in from Ireland.
I was. I'm actually calling from France. I was just in Ireland, but I'm in France now.
Well, I appreciate your willingness to stay up late for us to have this conversation.
Can you
tell us a little bit about yourself first, and then about the National Health Federation?
Sure. I'm an attorney, a California licensed attorney, graduated from Bolt Hall School of Law and specialized early on in food and drug law. In fact, I was one of the first food and drug lawyers west of the Mississippi. There was one other guy who used to work for the FDA who was ahead of me. And then in the 1980s, I got involved with the National Health Federation because its politics and its philosophical outlook dovetailed with mine very closely, and they were interested in freedom of choice for consumers, doctors, and the like. I also represented various alternative care physicians against state medical boards. I did that both in New York State and in California State. The boards tried to take their licenses away for their, quote, unorthodox, close quote, medical practices, when in fact they were just trying to protect their patients and do the best they could for their patients. And as part of the being involved with the National Health Federation, I'm both on its board, and it is the oldest health freedom organization in the world, having been founded 56 years and 2 days ago. And I became the president 4 years ago when the previous president had died. And I was just general counsel, but I had been attending the Codex meetings for some years. The NHF is the only health freedom organization that has a recognized accredited status by the Codex Alimentarius Commission to attend its meetings. So we've been going there, and they've regretted it ever since they let us in the door because we've been such a gadfly to them. We're constantly in pretty much knockdown, drag-out fights with the people who don't want consumers or patients to have freedom of choice. So we're there to give them that voice.
That's actually a great segue. Can you give us kind of the 30,000-foot overview of Codex and then get into some of the weeds on some of the specific battles you've been fighting, especially things that would interest our doctors and their patients?
I'd be happy to. We first became involved in following Codex, we meaning the National Health Federation, in around 1996, 1997, but we were just monitoring it. Then in the year 2000, I started attending as part of the U.S. delegation, just a couple of years, and then they more or less blocked me from going on again, which was quite fortuitous because that led me to, in about a 6 to 8 week period, to quickly get accredited status for the NHF, which then let us speak out at the meetings and the like. So what is Codex Alimentarius Commission? It's basically an international standard-setting body that's setting standards for food worldwide under the auspices of the United Nations. There are two organizations, the Food and Agriculture Organization, FAO, and the World Health Organization that together created Codex back in the 1960s, the early 60s. And then what happened is that it sort of coasted along, not of much importance to anyone really, until the 1994 Uruguay round of GATT negotiations, the GATT treaty that the U.S. is a signatory to, which became in that year the WTO, the World Trade Organization. Suddenly, Codex standards started to have some enforcement power behind them through WTO sanctions. So everyone started to become increasingly interested in Codex, and one committee in particular, which is the Codex Committee on Nutrition and Foods for Special Dietary Uses. Now, this is the CCNFSDU, an incredibly boringly long acronym. But this one's the important one, because one of the most important ones, because it's the committee that concerns itself with the vitamin mineral food supplement guidelines, which the NHF in South Africa fought bitterly tooth and nail back in 2003, 2004, and then 2005. We lost that battle. They did create the guidelines, but they still haven't implemented them because they're just a framework right now. The problem with these guidelines, well, the problem is that they're setting maximum upper permitted levels for supplements that are extremely safe, and a lot of, not all, but many of your physician members, your surgeon members of your organization probably prescribe or use or recommend in some way higher dose vitamin mineral supplements than would be able to be found under these guidelines. So we've been fighting a delaying action since the adoption of the framework to delay the implementation of the actual maximum upper permitted levels, which have not yet been figured out. There's still a fight going on that. But what they are working on now, what is current, and what we just finished fighting over last November, seems a long ways away, but as the world turns, you know, events accelerate so much, it'll be November again before long, and we'll be fighting it. But what we were fighting were nutrient reference values, NRVs, which we would call in the States recommended daily allowance or recommended dietary intake. And this is what the average Joe or Sue goes by when they look at a label, not someone informed such as yourself who goes by the raw numbers like 60 milligrams of vitamin C. You know, that's a joke. But most people don't. They see 100% on the label and they go, hey, I'm getting all I need, let's party. And they don't realize that smoking a cigarette can destroy the, you know, a typical cigarette will destroy 60 milligrams of vitamin C. And if that's what the 100% mark is for the nutrient reference value, which is what it currently is at Codex level, they won't think to go beyond that that amount. So that's why it's so critically important. But at a meeting 2 years ago in Dusseldorf, a year and a half ago in Dusseldorf, the NHF was the only one to really stand up and say, and to fight it tooth and nail, to prevent Codex from dumbing down the NRVs. They wanted to reduce vitamin C from 60 milligrams to 45 milligrams. They wanted to reduce 100% of the vitamin A from 800 micrograms down to 550 micrograms. They wanted to reduce magnesium from 300 milligrams down to 240 milligrams, and so on. They actually wanted to increase calcium from 800 to 1,000, which if you reduce magnesium, in my opinion, that's a big mistake. Too much calcium, too little magnesium. But be that as it may, we were able to stop them virtually single-handedly at the Dusseldorf meeting, and then at the last meeting in Santiago of the same committee, that is the nutrition committee, we had more support than we even had at the first meeting because we were able to stop the momentum, and now the momentum is more on our side. So there's one example of something that's happened on the nutrition front. There are also other areas, I don't know if you want me to go into them, with the melamine, with the ractopamine, with the GM food labeling. Those are all areas that we fight in other committees.
Actually, wouldn't mind if you'd be willing to come back at a later date to talk about GMOs. I think that'd be very interesting for our listeners. Would that be okay with you?
That would, but I just realized when you asked me that, I didn't finish answering your question, which was, you know, I talked about the commission, which meets actually once a year in either Rome or Geneva, depending upon whether it's in alternate years, meets at the headquarters of the FAO in Rome or the WHO in Geneva. But it's given birth to, at this stage, 27 different committees, one of which I did mention, the Nutrition Committee. But when you're asking me that question, Michael, it reminded me of, you know, all the other committees. That is the food labeling one that deals with GM food label, is the Codex Committee on Food Labeling that's sponsored or hosted by Canada. There's the Codex Committee on Contaminants in Food that meets in Holland. There's the Codex Committee on Food Additives that's hosted by China. There's the Codex Committee on General Principles. It's hosted by the French government. There's the commission itself, which, as I mentioned already, meets at the two headquarters of the host governments, host organizations that gave birth to Codex. But it's important for your listeners to remember that Codex really just deals with food items. It doesn't deal with medicinals or drugs. All it means is food code. That's what Codex Alimentarius means, but most doctors will know that from their study of Latin. Anyway, each of these committees, these some 27 different committees, we don't attend all the meetings, but a lot of them have given birth in turn to grandchildren of the commission, that is, working groups. And the working groups is really where a lot of the action is these days, because the committees are just so overwhelmed with work, as is the commission itself, that they rely upon what the working groups have done. The working groups then report to the committees, who almost universally rubber stamp their work and then push it up the chain to the commission itself, and the commission will rubber stamp what the committees have done. So it's really important to, for someone like us or whomever, to address these issues at the lowest level, earliest level possible, as the standards move through an eight-step process. Now, the problem is that we are just an INGO, an international non-governmental organization. The ones that really count are the country delegates that are from literally Albania to Zimbabwe. And they each technically have a vote, but the decisions are made by consensus. The chairman or the chairwoman will look around the room, see who has spoken the most. The squeaky wheel theory is definitely applicable at Codex meetings. If you don't speak out, you might as well stay home and not have been there. Once the country member delegates have spoken, and these are all FDA-type bureaucrats or Department of Agriculture-type bureaucrats, they aren't freedom-loving people. They're very socialist-oriented. They're very control-oriented. They're very rule-making-oriented. Once they finish speaking, then the INGOs get to speak up. Now, of the INGOs, I would say 90-plus percent are trade organizations. These are like the World Sugar Research Organization, the International Dairy Federation, those kind of people with special interest interest causes. And then there are just a handful of consumer groups, and of them all, the National Health Federation is the only one that is there that's really interested in health freedom. I haven't seen it in any other organization there.
Scott, if our listeners are interested in learning more about the National Health Federation, where would they go? What's your website address?
They would go to our website is at www, of course, dot, and then V, like the article V, the T-H-E, and then our initials, NHF.com. We couldn't get just NHF.com, so it's the NHF.com, T-H-E. NHF.com, and they can sign up on our e-list very easily. We keep the information confidential, strictly confidential, and we don't trade or spam or do anything with it except keep it in-house. It would help a lot because we can get the news out directly on the Codex meetings. These are the members of our e-list are the first to hear of what happens at the Codex meetings from our lips to their ears, or their eyes, I should say. And thanks for asking. And then to join is very inexpensive, $36 a year, and it helps send us to the Codex meetings, which we need, because we attend probably five or six a year, and it's not cheap. They have the meetings all over the world. Last year I was in Santiago, Quebec City, Geneva. We also had a member, NHF member, who went to the Codex meeting in San Diego.
This is Michael Osterling with the Medical Freedom Report, a project of the Association of American Physicians and Surgeons, and I'm speaking with Scott Tipps, the president of the National Health Federation, also author of the book Codex Alimentarius, Global Food Imperialism. Scott, our listeners, I think, would be very interested in learning more about your book, at least were to purchase your book. Where can they do so?
Thanks. They could go online. There's a site there on our website, on our homepage. There's actually a direct link that from the homepage that they could click on, I think it's called Freedom Resources, and then it will push out a menu that says NHF Codex Book, and they can order it directly there. And that there's also a video that was just done by Kevin Miller on NHF at Codex, which you can see at off the homepage as well. So, but the Codex Book, I recommend getting it. We're starting to run low of the printing, so there won't be that many copies left. And it is, I recommend it. I doubt we'll either come out with a second edition in a few years or something, but in the meantime, this is it, and there aren't many copies left.
Well, last question for you, Scott. Now, our doctors and their patients are listening to this conversation. Obviously, they should go to your website and sign up, thenhf.com, to keep abreast of the Codex and your activities to fight for their freedom internationally. But if our members, Americans here, are interested in participating and fighting for their freedom as well, what can you recommend that they do?
You know, I'm super encouraged that AAPS has the same views on all of these issues, at least so far as I can see, on all of these issues that we do, you know, against the Obamacare, for freedom of choice, against mandatory vaccine, again, for freedom of choice instead. A lot of these are key issues, but what can any of us do? The main thing is to be mindful of the slogan that we've always used, which is that politicians don't see the light, they only feel the heat. So one needs to be persistently vocal at keeping on applying the heat on any issue and working with a group such as AAPS or NHF or both to promote our viewpoints, which are basically the right to be left alone and to engage in freedom of choice in healthcare that we want to do. We just don't want to have things forced on us that we don't believe in. So what do you do about that to help promote it? Well, there's so much nonsense going around on the internet these days and in the mainstream media that every time one of your listeners sees this, it's real easy to just read it and then grumble to oneself. Well, be proactive. You know, write a response right then and there to it. Tell them that it's nonsense. If they don't know an argument, then refer them to both of our websites on the link right there, on the comment that's posted either on the blog or on the response to a Yahoo article or to a Google article that might be there or something that might have been in the local press online. It's real important to respond right away. And this is just in terms of media response, let alone what you do with a politician. And what I mean by being persistently vocal, both with a politician and in a media response, is that when you write one thing, you don't just let it lie and go back and watch reruns of Gilligan's Island or whatever it is people are watching these days, but instead you then send an email, you then pick up the phone, you then write a regular letter, you then get your friends together and go pay the politician a visit or the person whose viewpoint you want to influence to try to convince them to change their position. Because again, this is what happens at the Codex meetings. I've noticed that when we were fighting the NRV settings, the lowering of the NRVs, and we had our victory, it wasn't because we spoke up once and sat down. We would have been steamrolled, ignored, and it would have gone on to approval, or at least been farther along the road to approval. Instead, I stood there and I argued back and forth with various delegates, country delegates, for better part of an hour to win. And it impressed enough people that we actually had, believe it or not, the Iraqi delegate said something in support of NHF, and the Indian delegate said something at the very end in support of us that helped tip the balance. And so what it took was a determined stand. It took speaking from the heart, which is what we do at the Codex meetings. You know, these FDA-type bureaucrats, when they're there, a lot of them, they don't really believe in their position, or if they do, it comes from something they just were indoctrinated with in college or even in high school or before high school. they don't really believe it. And if they do, then that's even more dangerous. But the fact is they never speak from the heart. And so when we do, it really sounds different. It comes across differently. So your listeners, when they speak, they should be speaking from the heart as well. The person will notice the difference. They speak with conviction. That will be noticed as well. Well, it'll have a multiplier effect with what they're trying to do. So it's really just a matter of being persistent on all issues and not giving up. All it takes is a determined minority.
Well, thank you, Scott. I've been speaking with Scott Tipps. He's the president of Natural Health Federation. Scott, thank you very much for joining us in this conversation today, and I look forward to another one in the near future.
Thank you. Just let me know. I'd be more than happy to, and I really appreciate your interest, and I appreciate all that you do, too, Michael. Thank you.